All right, the webinar is live and we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
All right, thank you. Good morning. The April 22nd, 2021 public meeting of the Air Resources Board will come to order. Board Clerk Sakazaki, please call the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Balms. Mr. De La Torre. Mr. Eisenhut.
Yes, here.
Supervisor Fletcher.
Here.
Senator Flores?
Here.
Assemblymember Garcia? Ms. Hurt?
Present.
Mr. Krakow?
Here.
Dr. Pacheco Werner?
Present.
Mrs. Reardon?
Here.
Supervisor Serna?
Here.
Professor Sperling?
Here.
Ms. Tekvorin? Ms. Tekvorin?
Unmuting, that's part of the process. Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Vice Chair Berg?
Here.
Chair Randolph?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. We are conducting today's meeting with Zoom and have organized the proceedings to mirror our normal board meeting as close as possible. But understandably, there will be some differences. We request your patience and understanding if any technical problems arise. I will now ask the board clerk to provide more details on today's procedures.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ryan Sakazaki, and I'm one of the board clerks. I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the board items, or if you want to make a comment during the open comment period at the end of today's meeting, you must be on Zoom webinar or calling in by telephone. If you are currently watching the webcast on CalSpan but wish to comment, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the public agenda. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature on Zoom. If you wish to speak on a board item, please virtually raise your hand as soon as the item has begun to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you are using a computer or tablet, there's a raise hand button. If you're calling in on the telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. Even if you have previously registered and indicated which item you wish to speak on, please raise your hand at the beginning of the item. If you do not raise your hand, your chance to speak will be skipped. When the comment period starts, the order of commenters will be determined by who raises their hand first. I will call each commenter by name and then activate each commenter when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in, I will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. We will not show a list of commenters. However, I will be announcing the next three or so commenters in the queue so you're ready to testify and know who is coming up next. Please note you will not appear by video during your testimony. I would like to remind everyone, commenters, board members, and CARB staff to please state your name for the record before you speak. This is important in this remote meeting setting and especially important for those calling in to testify on an item. We will have a time limit for each commenter. The normal time limit is 3 minutes, though this could change based on the discretion of the chair. During public testimony, you will see a timer on screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. If you wish to submit a written comment today, please visit CARB's Send Us Your Comment page or look at the public agenda on our webpage for links to send these documents electronically. Comments will be accepted on each item until the chair closes the record for that board item. I would like to give a friendly reminder to our board members and CARB staff to please mute yourself when you're not speaking to avoid background noise. Also, when you do speak, please speak from a quiet location. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call 805-772-2715 so an IT person assist. This number is noted on the public agenda. Thank you. I would like to turn the microphone back to Chair Norton. I'm sorry, Chair Randolph. Apologize.
Thank you. I just wanted to take a moment to wish everyone a happy Earth Day today. This has been such a tough, challenging 13 or 14 months that I think we really look for signs of hope and optimism. And we saw some measure of that this week. We saw some accountability for the murder of George Floyd. We see vaccines rolling out quickly and effectively. And this Earth Day feels hopeful because we're at an incredible moment where local governments, companies, national governments are making stronger climate commitments than ever before, including the Biden-Harris administration's brand new commitment to 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. Implementing these commitments, including through support of local and state leadership, will create new jobs and help build vibrant and sustainable communities with good transit. We're looking forward to partnering with everyone that shares our goals to drive down harmful pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Of course, there is a lot to do. The American Lung Association State of the Air report tells us that 7 of the 10 cities with the worst air pollution are still in California. But we're committed to turning the tide and making our air clean for all Californians. Whether it's through the AB 617 program, our regulatory work, our incentive programs, there are many important efforts underway at CARB that will allow us to realize these goals and carry this optimism forward. So happy Earth Day, everyone. And I hope you take a moment to enjoy the incredible beauty that is California. Okay, I'm going to turn to the only agenda item that we have for today's meeting, item number 21-3-2, and that's a public hearing to consider the proposed mobile source certification and compliance fees. If you wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We'll call on you when we get to the public comment portion of the item. This proposal establishes a new and expanded certification and compliance fee schedule to replace the current fee structure that only applies to on-road vehicles. Since adoption of the current fee regulations in 1990, CARB's mobile source program has expanded greatly with new requirements for on-road vehicles as well as emission requirements for numerous off-road vehicles, equipment, engines, and components sold in the state. The new regulations would broaden CARB certification fee regulation to provide for much greater recovery of the state's cost to administer CARB's critical certification and compliance efforts. Mr. Corey, would you please introduce the item?
Yes, thanks, Chair. In order to sell a new car, truck, motorcycle, off-road engine, or aftermarket part in California, a manufacturer must apply for and receive CARB approval. In 1988, the legislature provided CARB authority to establish annual fees to cover the costs of state programs related to motor vehicles and engines in California. The fee was limited to on-road cars, trucks, and motorcycles, and was capped at $4.5 million per year with annual adjustments based on the California Consumer Price Index. Since this time, the emission control requirements for on-road vehicles have expanded. And our program also now cover many off-road categories, such as lawn and garden equipment, recreational vehicles, utility engines, and large construction equipment, just to name a few. The number of approvals issued annually have increased nearly tenfold since the fee schedule was first put into place. And as such, the fees we receive currently cover only about a quarter of our cost to carry out these certification and compliance efforts. The legislature provided CARB with new authority to better recover the costs of these programs by providing for the collection of certification fees from manufacturers of off-road vehicles and engines, aftermarket parts, and emission control components. The legislature also removed the cap from existing on-road fee authority. The proposal in front of you today provides a much-needed update to CARB's certification and compliance fee regulation that better reflects the amount of work CARB staff does in this area and better provides for recovery of the corresponding costs. This proposal was developed in close coordination with manufacturers. I'll now ask Byron Ng of the Emission Certification and Compliance Division to provide some background on the activities required by CARB's Mobile Source Certification and Compliance Program. Then Kathleen Mead of the Emission Certification and Compliance Division will continue with the staff's proposed regulatory fee presentation. So with that, Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. Good morning, Chair Randolph and members of the board. I am pleased to present an overview of the California Air Resources Board's mobile source certification and in-use compliance programs. Today, I will be providing an overview of CARB's mobile source programs and describe how adopted mobile source emission standards and other regulatory requirements are implemented. These programs are administered by many different divisions, including the Emission Certification Compliance Division, the Mobile Source Laboratory Division, the Monitoring and Laboratory Division, and the Transportation and Toxics Division. I will touch on the goals of the program, how certification works, how applications are processed, and how we ensure that vehicles and engines continue to comply with emission standards in use. The primary goal of CARB's Mobile Source Certification and Compliance Program is to ensure that vehicles and engines sold in California meet all emission requirements both when new and when in use. We do this in three basic ways. We review the applications that manufacturers submit for their new mobile source products to certify that they comply with CARB's emission standards and requirements. This process must be completed before the products can be used or sold in California. We evaluate aftermarket parts intended for use on certified vehicles and engines to make sure that they won't reduce emission control system effectiveness. And lastly, the mobile source program also ensures that products sold remain compliant for their useful life and that in-use issues are resolved in a timely manner. So what do we certify? CARB certifies a wide range of on-road and off-road mobile source products, as shown here. On-road products include passenger cars, pickup trucks, motorcycles, and heavy-duty engines and vehicles, while off-road engines include lawnmowers, weed trimmers, forklifts, all-terrain vehicles, recreational boats, large construction and farm equipment, and more. Not only does CARB certify almost every vehicle or engine with an internal combustion engine, but CARB also approves parts that modify those products. Part approvals include the emission control components such as catalytic converters, evaporative canisters, fuel tanks, diesel particulate filters, add-on components, and systems to convert vehicles to operate on different fuels. In addition, CARB approves alternative emission control equipment, or bonnets, for container ships and actions to clean up emissions in existing locomotives. CARB's involvement with the manufacturer for a given vehicle or engine design typically begins 1 to 3 years before the manufacturer begins production. Post-production activities to ensure compliance can occur for up to 15 years from the time of production. I'll go into more details on the various aspects of CARB certification compliance effort in the following slides. This slide shows the type of documentation and data that are submitted as part of the application to obtain an executive order. Each approval process requires elements specific to the vehicle or engine category being certified. For on-road sources, significant effort is exerted to ensure auxiliary emission control devices, onboard diagnostic systems, and emission control strategies meet the requirements and that no hidden defeat devices are present. These items, shown in red, are among the more resource-intensive activities related to certification. To provide a sense of magnitude of this work, staff processed over 3,800 applications in 2019. About a quarter of these were for on-road vehicles, a little more than one half were for off-road vehicles and engines, and the remaining quarter applications were for aftermarket and evaporative component approvals. Once an executive order is issued, the manufacturer may start to sell their certified product in California. The mobile source certification and compliance process doesn't end once the executive order is issued. After the product is sold, continued compliance with emission standards are double-checked through a variety of in-use programs, which includes laboratory testing and on-vehicle monitoring systems. In-use emissions testing and warranty activities help confirm that vehicles, engines, and any retrofit emission control equipment continue to comply with CARB requirements throughout their useful lives. Compliance issues found through these programs can result in required corrective actions, including product recall or extended warranties. For cars and trucks, there are two paths for in-use testing. The first is in-use testing conducted by the manufacturer, where results are submitted for review by CARB. The second is in-use testing conducted by CARB. Staff works with the contractor to procure at least 10 well-maintained vehicles with mileage up to 75% of useful life. In some cases, they are tested using a portable emissions measurement system, or PEMS, to test for other issues of concern. If the vehicles do not pass the testing, manufacturers are required to pursue corrective action. These programs have been very effective in ensuring that emission control components are durable and effective for their useful life, and that in-use problems are corrected in a timely manner. This slide shows the number of test groups and vehicles tested in-house at the Hagen Schmidt Lab for Emissions Certification and Compliance Division between 2016 and 2020. Also, you can see the manufacturer's self-testing program, which helps CARB target problematic test groups for potential corrections. These testing programs have played an instrumental role in confirming ongoing emissions compliance of certified light and medium duty test groups and has resulted in the recall of approximately 200,000 vehicles in California and 2 million vehicles nationwide over the last 5 years. Similar to the light duty program, in-use testing of heavy duty vehicles is done by both manufacturers and CARB. CARB reviews the data submitted by manufacturers to ensure compliance and selects models for its own test programs. Dozens of engine families are tested in a typical year, and the program has been effective in identifying non-complying products. Nearly 50,000 California trucks have been recalled for repairs based on this testing. CARB regulation requires manufacturers to submit warranty data for emission-related problems. When a defect rate exceeds certain limits, CARB can request the manufacturer to initiate corrective action, typically in the form of a recall or extended warranty. In 2019, manufacturers initiated about 80 recalls and 40 extended warranties to address emission-related problems in the field. Altogether, more than 1.6 million vehicles were affected. CARB also conducts laboratory audits where the manufacturers perform their in-use testing. This ensures that the manufacturer or contract laboratory equipment comply with regulatory specifications and that their vehicles or engines are prepared, treated, and tested consistently with applicable regulatory procedures. In addition, staff conducts field operations to assure that vehicles sold in California are compliant with the pertinent regulations by conducting vehicle and equipment surveys and reviewing dealership records. In the next few slides, I will show some examples of the types of compliance testing that CARB performs. This picture shows a light-duty vehicle being tested for in-use compliance at CARB's Hagen Schmidt Laboratory in El Monte. Typically, each vehicle test can take from 1 to 3 days to complete. CARB will have more expanded testing capabilities at the new Riverside facility. Here is an example of a heavy-duty vehicle being tested with CARB's portable emissions measurement system. It takes about a week of extensive on-road driving to fully test a truck for compliance. This piece of equipment is called a sealed housing for evaporative determination, or SHED. It is used for measuring evaporative emissions from fuel systems in passenger cars, recreational boats, other small equipment, and even portable fuel containers. Another aspect of CARB certification compliance effort is implementation of the diesel retrofit verification program. This program supports the various heavy-duty fleet rules by evaluating aftermarket diesel particulate filters or other technologies that are designed to be fitted to existing vehicles and engines to further reduce in-use emissions. There are two associated in-use programs. The first is in-field evaluation of device performance, and second, filters are tested in the lab by the manufacturer to ensure certified emission reductions continue over the useful life of the product. California requires certain types of ships to reduce their emissions at berth. This currently includes control requirements for container vessels, refrigerated cargo vessels, and cruise vessels, with auto carriers included in 2025 and tankers in 2025 and 2027. The most common way ships control their emissions is by turning off their engines and plugging into grid electricity at berth. However, some ships use alternative technologies for compliance, such as a barge-based capture and control system, shown in this photo, which connects to a vessel's exhaust stack and captures and cleans the exhaust to reduce emissions instead of plugging into shore power. The alternative technologies must be approved by CARB under the at-birth regulatory requirements and receive an executive order to be used for compliance with the at-birth regulation. In summary, our emission standards are only as effective as our successful implementation of the mobile source regulations. Programs like certification and in-use compliance are critical to achieving California's clean air goals. And now, I'm going to turn it over to Kathleen Mead of the Emissions Certification and Compliance Division to present the fee regulatory item before the board today.
Kathleen, you're muted.
Thank you, Barvin. Good morning, Chair Randolph, members of the board, and public participants. Today, staff is proposing new regulations to revise and expand the schedule of fees for CARB's Mobile Source Certification and Compliance Program. In this presentation, I will provide an overview of legislative history authorizing CARB to recover certification and compliance costs through fees, how the proposed mobile source fees were developed, the fee categories staff are proposing, how the payment process would work, and our response to comments received from the stakeholders. First, I'd like to review the legislation concerning certification fees. In 1988, the legislature provided authority to establish and collect fees for the certification of motor vehicles. These fees were capped at $4.5 million and with annual adjustments by the California Consumer Price Index is now capped at about $10 million. The first fee regulations were adopted in 1990. At that time, CARB certification and compliance program only covered on-road vehicles such as cars, trucks, and motorcycles, and the emission standards only covered basic exhaust and evaporative emission requirements. In total, 430 executive orders were issued. Since that time, the mobile source program has expanded with more complex applications and requirements for on-road vehicles. Further, emission standards and certification procedures have been established for many off-road and aftermarket mobile source categories. As a result, the number of executive orders CARB issues had grown dramatically to over 3,800 per year. So while the level of certification and compliance activity has increased greatly, fees collected from manufacturers have not kept up with CARB's costs of implementing its expanded mobile source program. The fees currently collected only cover about one-third the costs of the current on-road program and cover only about one-quarter of the cost of the total mobile source certification and compliance program. The gap between program costs and cost recovery through certification fees has been bridged through existing state funding sources, such as the Air Pollution Control Fund, the Motor Vehicle Account, and others. In 2018, the legislature recognized this imbalance and provided new authority to allow for collection of additional fees. Senate Bill 854 established a new authority housed in Health and Safety Code 43019.1, allowing CARB to adopt a schedule of fees to cover reasonable costs associated with the certification, audit, and compliance of off-road or non-vehicular engines and equipment, aftermarket parts, and emission control components sold in the state. This legislation also established a new fund, the Certification and Compliance Fund, for the deposit and use of these fees for CARB's mobile source certification and compliance programs. The language directs CARB to consider several factors in developing these fees, including the impacts on manufacturers,
complexity of the categories, product impacts on emission, potential change in number of applications received, the impacts on processing time if the fee doesn't cover CARB's cost. In 2019, the legislature removed the cap from the existing fee authority on on-road mobile sources and directed staff to collect fees to reimburse reasonable costs for certification compliance activities for deposit into the new certification and compliance fund. On-road fees would continue to be adjusted annually by the California Consumer Price Index under this legislation. Now I will review the process for the development of the fees that would be established in the regulation under staff's proposal. First, this regulatory effort involved significant outreach to affected stakeholders. Five workshop series were held, along with separate communications and meetings with several associations and individual companies. Staff had originally planned to bring this item to the board in 2020, but delayed release of the proposal for several months to ensure that the new certification fees would not exacerbate financial impacts to the industries as a result of COVID-19 pandemic. Overall, staff engaged in extensive communication with industry to obtain their feedback at each stage of the development of the proposed regulation, from cost development, SRIA analysis for business effects, to the actual development of the fees. The scope of staff's proposal covered these different topic areas that would establish or revise fees for 35 different mobile source certification categories. These regulatory categories regulate nearly all mobile source vehicles, engines, and products certified to be sold or operated within the state. The scope of activities that the fees would cover were limited to costs associated with the certification and compliance activities that ensure the mobile source products fully meet CARB's emission standards and requirements. Costs associated with enforcement activities, research, or regulatory development were not considered in the development of these fees. To estimate CARB's program costs for certification and compliance, surveys were conducted to collect 2018 labor, operational, equipment, and facility costs to implement the program. Equipment costs were amortized over 10 years. Facility space takes into account only the space used for vehicle and engine testing. The labor analysis included basic housing and equipment costs. The costs for equipment and facility were adjusted to only include the percentage of time they were used to conduct certification and compliance activities. Staff used the 2018 cost analysis to project certification and compliance costs for the start date of the proposal in calendar year 2022. 2022 costs are estimated to be about $48 million, with the on-road categories costing the most to implement. This cost analysis takes into account the expanded testing services that will be available for certification and compliance activities at the new Riverside Laboratory, which will be open later this year. The regulation would establish an upfront fee to be submitted with the application for each of the regulatory categories. The 35 different categories would be divided into six groups: on-road, off-road, evaporative components, aftermarket parts, retrofits, and at-birth technologies, due to the differences in fee authorities, emission requirements, and other program differences. In developing the fee schedule to provide for recovery of these costs, Staff started with the average cost per application within each regulation category. From there, staff included adjustments to address business impacts for small businesses, products produced for California in low production, and simpler applications that take less time and effort to evaluate. Staff worked closely with industry to obtain vehicle and equipment pricing, product pricing, and other business impacts. Staff established appropriate lower cost fee types that were needed to address considerations applicable to each of the categories. One exception is for the aftermarket parts. The aftermarket part industry is highly competitive. These parts are typically much lower cost than a vehicle or engine and do not have the pricing flexibility seen in other categories. Staff work closely with the aftermarket industry associations to establish base fees, which would minimize the business impacts within the category. As seen with other categories, low-cost fee types were established for small businesses and simpler applications. Another exception is the retrofit and at-birth regulations. For these regulations, regulatory activities occur through the lifespan of the product. Manufacturers requested to have the cost spread across all the activities under the regulation to reduce the upfront costs. The fees are determined based on the amount of time staff is expected to spend on each activity. The reduced fee to support small businesses was also included. Under staff's proposal, fees will begin to apply for applications received in the first quarter of 2022 or upon the effective date of the regulation as established by the Office of Administrative Law. Most of the 2023 model year applications will be subject to the new fees. The proposed fee regulation will replace the existing fee assessment process. This year will be the last year we collect fees under the existing regulations for on-road vehicles produced in 2020. The total estimated fees collected in 2022 and 2031, respectively, are $20.6 and $45.5 million. These values represent the total fees collected for a given year. The current baseline revenue is included. Fee totals would be significantly less in the first 2 years of the regulation due to staff's proposed phase-in of fees to reduce the burden of the fee increases. This phase-in would reduce the initial amount of base fees by 50% for fees collected in 2022 and 25% for fees collected in 2023. Phase-in reductions would end in 2024. Phase-in reductions would not apply to already significantly discounted fee types. This slide and the next summarize the range of fees assessed and the estimated total fees collected in 2024 after the fee phase-in. For on-road sources, we expect to collect about $32.7 million. The fees will be adjusted annually for on-road sources by the Consumer Price Index starting with model year 2026 applications. All these categories have lower cost fee types to address vehicle and engine design carryover from previous model years and evaluations of applications using zero emission technologies. These low-cost fee types are reduced by up to 75% of the base fee. For the motorcycle category, a lower application fee was added to address some very small volume application types. This slide shows the range of fees and the estimated 2024 fees collected for evaluation and certification of on-road engines and vehicles and equipment. evaporative components, aftermarket parts, retrofits, and at-birth emission control equipment. Lower cost fee types also apply to some of these categories for small businesses, simpler applications, and zero emission technologies. In addition to the fee structure that I've already presented, staff has also developed special fees for infrequent or very simple and routine applications. The fees are based on average staff, labor time, and cost. The expected revenues from these fees is included in the total from the two previous slides. For all categories combined, staff estimates that the total amount of fees collected will be about $40 million, while 100% recovery of CARB costs would not be reached with this proposal due to the lower fee types proposed to reduce business impacts. This amount does constitute the cost recovery of over 80% and would quadruple the yearly certification fee amounts that CARB currently collects. The cost of this regulation triggered the requirement to conduct a standardized regulatory impact analysis for the Department of Finance. The cost figures are based on the increase in costs above the current baseline and are amortized over 5 years. This analysis shows minimal or no impact to businesses and an amortized additional cost to household of $1.24 per year across all categories. The direct benefit of the proposed regulation is an estimated additional cost recovery of $264 million over the first 10 years of the Mobile Source Certification and Compliance Programs, which play a key role in protecting public health and safety and the environment. This regulation will not create, modify any emission standards or emission control requirements. Next, I will say a little bit about the payment process for these certification fees. The fee structure is set up as an upfront fee due at the time that the application is submitted. The correct fee amount must be received by CARB prior to the review or processing of the application. If a manufacturer uses a discounted fee that is based on a low volume product limit, future applications will not be processed until the correct fee is paid if the low volume limit is exceeded. As a part of our 15-day changes, the option for credits when an application is withdrawn has been replaced by refunds. Using the same criteria as proposed for credits, CARB will provide refunds for applications not submitted or withdrawn 45 days of fee payment. If the applicant is notified that the submitted fee is incorrect, the date of the notification will be used as the start date for the refund period. Now I'd like to turn to stakeholder comments received since the release of the staff proposal. First, CARB staff recognized the different fee structure was needed for the approval of replica cars and kit cars applications to reflect the different level of staff work required for approvals compared to regular on-road vehicle applications. For the powertrain application, staff is proposing a fee of which 50% of the base fee for light duty applications. The fee for vehicles would be $1,000. CARB staff has drafted 15-day language to incorporate these fees into the regulation. One manufacturer has commented that the fees set for light-duty vehicles will greatly impact the price of models that are produced in very low volume. While staff agrees that the magnitude of the proposed fee will be significant when spread across a relatively low number of vehicles, such models almost invariably high cost luxury or sports cars that often cost more than $100,000. Also, staff believes that this cost can be rolled into the vehicle price. Further, low-volume models must meet all emission standards and requirements that apply to models produced in higher volume. As such, the cost to CARB to certify light-duty vehicle does not vary with product volume. Similarly, some on-road motorcycle manufacturers produce a number of low-volume models that are typically targeted to entry-level motorcyclists. Industry has commented that the proposed certification and compliance fee will have an impact on product pricing that is much too great. In this case, staff is proposing 15-day changes to expand our proposal to include greatly reduced fee for amounts for three additional low sale engine families for lower production manufacturers. Associations representing the motorcycle and recreational boating industries have requested a change to broaden the definition of partial carryover to include review of additional documents and devices. The intent of the low-cost fee was to pass along to industry cost savings from area where CARB's evaluation workload is reduced. Upon further review of current certification processes, additional work would be required for partial carryover reviews under the broader definition, such that little or no staff time savings may be realized after reviewing the additional comments. Therefore, no changes are being proposed. The Outdoor Power Equipment Institute, representing manufacturers of lawn garden engines and equipment, is concerned that fees proposed for your consideration today would increase as new emission control regulations are developed. The current fee proposal is based on current regulations and the staff resources needed to implement them. Staff is developing modified emission control regulations that may be presented later this year for your consideration. Today's proposed per application fee would not change as regulations are modified, unless amendments to these fee regulations are also adopted by the board. We recommend that the board adopt the proposed resolution, which would approve the proposed regulation and allow staff to further develop 15-day changes if needed. This concludes the staff's presentations.
Thank you for that presentation. We will now hear from the public who raised their hands to speak on this item. Will the board clerk please call the public commenters?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have 7 commenters with their hands currently raised. If you wish to make a comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 if you're on the telephone. I will call out the first 3 speakers. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. So our first 3 are Greg Knott, David Gock, and Kevin Brown. So Greg, I have activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
The Outdoor Power Equipment Institute is an international trade association representing more than 100 manufacturers and their suppliers of outdoor power equipment. OPI members' products are ubiquitous in California households, including products such as lawnmowers, garden tractors, chainsaws, and portable generators. OPI respectfully offers these comments to today's proposed rule for staff and board's consideration. OPI opposes today's proposed SOAR-powered equipment, SOAR component, and equivalent zero emissions certification fees described in the proposed rule. OPI requests the SOAR category be exempted from the rule until the impact of ongoing SOAR rulemaking can be understood. On March 21st, 2021, CARB staff proposed setting more SOAR-powered equipment emissions limits to zero, starting with model year 2024. The impact will be immediate, forcing most manufacturers out of the California market. As a result, if adopted, the number of model year 2024 executive orders will be reduced to a small fraction of today's certifications. More importantly, the sales volume of equipment is expected to be reduced in model year 2024 and fall to zero within a few years due to compliance relying on limited inventory and exhausted evaporative credits. Assuming the certification costs do not change and that the volume of equipment subject to certification will fall quickly, the passed down end user cost per unit would significantly increase beyond what is currently projected in today's proposed rule. These costs will fall hardest on the estimated 50,000 plus sole proprietor landscape business owners who rely on relatively low volume commercial grade equipment for their day-to-day operations, many of these businesses which are minority owned and or low income. Additionally, OPEI is concerned the proposed rule overestimates the SOAR certified population in its analysis, in turn underestimating the cost impact on the end user. CARB's SOAR 2020 model estimates model year 2018 gas-powered lawn and garden equipment sales of 1.44 million units. Considering other major SOAR categories, OPEI estimates less than 2 million units annually would be subject to certification and compliance fees, not the nearly 4 million units described in today's proposed rule. It's unclear to OPEI why there is such a discrepancy between CARB's SOAR 2020 model and the volumes estimated in today's proposed rule package. However, as a result, OPEI is concerned the end user costs in today's proposals are grossly underestimated. CARB must correct the estimated population and forecast and in turn the SOAR cost impact accordingly. Finally, the rule applies a broad brush strategy of averaging across SOAR fleet. In fairness to all consumers, CARB should present the cost impact on a per category basis. CARB estimates hundreds of different SOAR equipment types, including segregating equipment by use category, with equipment costs ranging from less than $100 to tens of thousands of dollars. In closing, OPEI opposes today's proposed rule. OPEI requests CARB exempt SOAR from the rule until the ongoing CARB SOAR rulemaking is complete and the impact on the market can be understood. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the comments to the rule. OPEI's full comments were submitted for the record on April 19th. OPEI asked that the CARB staff and the board consider OPEI's full comments before deciding on the proposed rule.
Thank you. Our next speaker is David Gawk. I have activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
Yes. Hi, this is Dave Goach. I'm commenting on behalf of the Specialty Equipment Market Association, which is the premier trade association consisting of a diverse group of manufacturers, distributors, retailers, publishing companies, auto restorers, street rod builders, restylers, car clubs, race teams, and more. Our members make, buy, sell, and use all kinds of specialty parts and accessories to make vehicles more attractive, more unique, more convenient, faster, safer, more fun, and even like new again. First, SEMA wants to acknowledge CARB staff's accessibility and willingness to work with SEMA. Thanks, Annette, Jackie, Kim, Alan, Kathleen. I'm blanking on them. Thank you all. Regarding the fees, SEMA supports moving forward with the aftermarket schedule as proposed. We do want to state for the record, however, this support is based on staff representations and understandings that the EO process will be clearly defined, understood, interpreted consistently, and executed collaboratively. Further, EO processing times should improve. EOs being issued consistent with the timeline SEMA created and is shared with CARB staff. Ideally, that timeline being memorialized by CARB staff as a policy type document. Lastly, our support is predicated on CARB staff's expressed interpretation of the procedures and that favorable, and I'm doing finger quotes around that, discretion will be exercised in the application of categories 1 and 8 and their related fees to the EO process to minimize the accumulated cost for a product's EO coverage. To be clear, as Kathleen expressed, the fee program for aftermarket parts was intended for industry to contribute to CARB's economics, not cover it, i.e. not doing the recovery of costs. In light of these considerations, SEMA requests the board direct there be a program review in no less than 18 months. The review should be a collaborative one, not just the opinions and analysis of staff, but include industry input to validate, one, that the procedures are being consistently applied to EO applications that are then being issued in a timely manner, and two, the fee structure has not resulted in an unacceptable multiplier that burdens or possibly discourages industry. Again, SEMA thanks CARB for the opportunity to participate in the process, and we represent an industry that does its part to honor Earth Day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Kevin Brown. After Kevin, we have Michael Hartrick, Stephen Geminis, Tia Sutton, and Viola Mader. And those will be the final four who have their hands up. So if you did not hear your name and you want to speak, please raise your hand now. Kevin, I have activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Randolph and members of the board, for this opportunity to speak to you today in support of the proposal. My name is Kevin Brown, and I'm representing the Manufacturers of Emission Controls Association. MECA is a nonprofit association of the world's leading manufacturers of clean mobility technology. Our members have nearly 50 years of experience in developing and commercializing emissions control, efficiency, and electric technologies for a wide variety of on-road and off-road vehicles and equipment in all world markets. MECA represents suppliers of first fit, as well as aftermarket and retrofit parts. Our industry has continually worked with and supported CARB's efforts to develop innovative, technology-advancing regulatory programs to improve air quality and address climate challenges. MECA supports this proposal. MECA and our members have worked with your staff over the past 2 years by engaging in multiple workshops, providing detailed comments, and supporting information. We thank your staff for their hard work and dedication in working with us to understand the business environment of the aftermarket catalytic converter and retrofit markets and environmental benefits from having these emission control products for maintaining vehicles and reducing emissions. We appreciate CARB's efforts to propose a schedule of fees that are reasonable and cost effective. This is the best way to encourage further industry investments to ensure the broadest parts coverage, maintain market competitiveness, and provide the lowest cost to the consumer so they can afford to maintain their vehicles once they are outside of their original manufacturer warranty periods, yet still have remaining service life. This is particularly important for social justice. In closing, our industry would like to highlight to the board our commitment to continue to work with staff and other stakeholders to expand the availability of effective aftermarket emission control components for the in-use fleet of light duty and heavy duty highway vehicles and off-road equipment. The supply of cost-effective replacement emission control parts is vital to air quality and environmental equity, given that many of these vehicles and pieces of equipment need to be maintained in a clean operating condition for 20 years or more. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Michael Hartrick. Michael, I've activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
Madam Chair and board members, I am Mike Hartrick, and I am here today on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, or more briefly, Auto Innovators, where I am a Senior Director for Energy and Environment. Auto Innovators is a trade association representing manufacturers and value chain partners who together produce nearly 99% of all light-duty vehicles sold in the United States. Our vision is to work with policymakers to support cleaner, safer, and smarter personal transportation that helps transform the U.S. economy and sustain American ingenuity and freedom of movement. Auto Innovators recognizes that current certification fees do not cover ARB's costs to implement its collective programs. Even so, light-duty vehicle manufacturers have historically borne a disproportionate burden of certification fees paid. Through the collaborative efforts of industry stakeholders and ARB staff, the staff proposal addresses both of these issues. We thank staff for their openness and willingness to discuss these issues and to work with us in addressing them. Make no mistake, this proposal will result in an increase in certification fees for light-duty vehicle manufacturers. However, it also fairly distributes the costs of ARB's certification programs across all six major regulatory groups. The proposal also addresses other light-duty vehicle manufacturer concerns. It includes a reasonable phase-in of increased fees for light-duty vehicle certifications and differing fees commensurate with ARB's costs for different types of applications, including full applications, carryover applications, and applications for zero-emission vehicles. For these reasons, the Alliance for Automotive Innovation supports the staff's recommendation to adopt the proposed resolution and regulations for the mobile source certification and compliance fees. Thank you for your time today. We look forward to continuing cooperative efforts with you and your staff towards a cleaner, safer, and smarter future.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Stephen Geminis. Stephen, I've activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, members of the board, including Chair Randolph. My name is Stephen Geminis. I'm a manager of cleaner advocacy with the American Lung Association. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on today's presentation and the board's work in updating the certification fees to ensure the state's air quality standards are achieved and overall mitigate harmful air pollution. With this, the Lung Association respectfully urges the adoption of the proposed regulations for the mobile source certification and compliance fees. We view this updated fees as vital to supporting the enforcement of cleaner policies to improve air quality, especially for our most impacted communities, such as individuals living with pre-existing conditions and low-income and disadvantaged communities who too often bear disproportionate health burdens from poor air quality. The policy will help ensure resources to follow through in mitigating air pollution and ensure resources are available to protect community lung health, ensure our most impacted communities are able to breathe clean, healthy air. Yesterday, our organization released our 22nd annual State of the Air Report, which found California cities continue to dominate each list of most polluted cities in the nation. For instance, 10 California cities rank on the list for the 25 most polluted cities in terms of short-term particle pollution in the U.S., ultimately placing immense health burdens on numerous communities throughout the state, such as asthma attacks, heart attacks and strokes, premature death and other respiratory and cardiovascular health impacts. In order to alleviate many of these health concerns, California must continue to ensure that our clean air programs are adequately and consistently funded to improve poor air quality throughout the state, such as the efforts outlined by state staff, today. But thank you all for your time and this important air quality measure as we view the updated fees as critical to promoting healthy lungs for all Californians. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Tia Sutton. After Tia, we have Eric Barnes. And now we'll conclude the list. Although I think Viola had her hand up, but she lowered it. If you wish to speak, you can raise your hand now. Tia Sutton, I have activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
Good morning and happy Earth Day. My name is Tia Sutton, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Truck and Engine Manufacturers Association. The regulatory programs upon which certification and compliance fees are based are changing significantly over the next decade, and it's imperative that any fees program be designed to accommodate future regulatory changes and to harmonize as much as possible with the US EPA's fees program. More details provided in our written statement, but I'd like to highlight the following items. The increased burden to regulated entities with the adoption of a separate and fundamentally different certification fees program is concerning. Even with the incorporation of a phase-in and reduced fee opportunities, the costs are still extremely high for many categories in relation to the US EPA fee schedule, and the ISOR and ESRIA did not provide sufficient detail in explaining the significant difference in the fees. In addition to fee credit provisions, a refund policy should be incorporated for instances of manufacturer overpayment, no certificate issued, zero sales, or where a manufacturer would have qualified for a reduced fee. Manufacturers could then choose to either receive a refund or a fee credit. Regulated entities should be permitted to use fee credits at any time with no expiry date. Regarding the criteria for fee credit table, if an application is withdrawn after 15 days, but no work has been performed on the application, a full refund or fee credit should also be provided. The proposal provides reduced fee provisions for low California production manufacturers, but only for categories for which a business need was identified prior to the publication of the proposal. New businesses entering the market in the future in any of these omitted categories or existing businesses that have a change in their California production will be unnecessarily penalized. Low production provisions must be provided for all sectors. EMA agrees with the comments of OPEI concerning the small off-road engine category. Given the SOAR rulemaking anticipated this fall, which aims to transition the category to zero emissions beginning in 2024, the proposed certification fees are based on current and projected sales and application complexity of products that may not exist under the draft program design presented by CARB staff during the March 24th SOAR workshop. For these and other reasons, we urge the board to provide staff additional time to fully consider and address all comments and concerns raised prior to adoption of a final regulation order. Thank you for the opportunity to provide our testimony today.
Thank you. Our last speaker is Eric Barnes. Eric, I've activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Chair Randolph and board members. I'm Eric Barnes with the Motorcycle Industry Council, representing also the Specialty Vehicle Institute of America and Recreational Off-Highway Vehicle Association. And we represent hundreds of manufacturers of vehicles, aftermarket parts, distributors, retailers, and dealers. And we're here to, first of all, give thanks to staff for the amount of time that they've given to consider our concerns and in their efforts to propose reduced fees for aftermarket parts and low volume engine families. However, our members remain concerned about a few things, and particularly the high cost of new certifications and you know, especially compared with EPA cert fees. EPA cert fees compared with CARB's proposed cert fees represent 900% plus difference. And that is very concerning to our members. California is a relatively small market compared with the rest of the U.S. And so the proposed fees do potentially have a significant impact on the development of future product and offering them in the California market. On-highway motorcycles are currently in the process of a regulatory development activity, which will result in considerable cost impact to manufacturers. And the addition of these fees will further amplify the cost impact for manufacturers. And so we request CARB to please expand reductions for our products. And we'd also like to ask that the certification process itself be looked at for improvement. Look for areas or ways in which the process can be improved to reduce costs. And thank you for your time. We have provided written comments.
Thank you. Madam Chair, that concludes the list of speakers for this item.
Thank you. I'd like to ask staff if there are any issues raised in the comments that you wanted to address for the record.
Yeah, Chair, I'm going to ask Deputy EO Annette Hebert to provide a quick summary. She may bring staff in as well as part of the response. So, Annette.
Hi, good morning. So, as was outlined in our presentation, certification compliance is a very, very intensive effort. And for years, we have been underfunded for this effort. So this is about, you know, leveling the playing field for manufacturers that haven't paid anything for the services rendered for years. ARB took a very intensive effort to determine what kind of, you know, what our actual costs are in certifying and ensuring compliance with all manufacturers. We took into consideration low volume situations, small business impacts. We had a lot of intensive interaction with manufacturers going back and forth. And we believe we've struck a balance with the fees that have been levied. And if you recall by the presentation, it is not a full cost recovery. Now, of course, for a lot of manufacturers that haven't been paying anything for years, this is going to be a new business impact for them when we start implementing it. So obviously, it is something that businesses and manufacturers are going to have to adjust for. They haven't paid fees before, or in the case of heavy duty and light duty manufacturers, they're going to be paying significantly more fees and appropriate fees based on the fact that the technology since 1990 have grown tremendously and the valuation time has grown tremendously. As we mentioned, OBD didn't exist back when the original fee was adopted. Complex aftermarket technologies like DPFs and SCR systems Engines have become very electronic and computer controlled, which requires way more evaluation. And so I believe we come to a balance. And I think that the two main companies right now that we are in opposition, including the small off-road engine category, there is a difference of opinion and how we did our cost analysis. We believe we did it correctly and are anticipating it correctly. And we disagree with their implications that we're off base. Now, obviously, it is a per application fee. So going into the new SOAR regulations, which haven't become before the board yet, and we don't know what those are actually going to lay out like, we believe that the per fee, the per application fee, depending on the type of equipment that's brought, obviously it's going to, you know, if you bring a lot of different types of product and there's a lot of applications, the cost will be higher. If you are going to slow down how much product you bring into California, then your fee collection will be less. Keep in mind also, there's a significant discount for electric type of equipment. So if you're going to bring a lot of electric equipment under the future SOAR regulations, you're going to pay a lot less per application fee. So there's a lot that's being considered as part of this. As far as the heavy duty engine manufacturers, this is one of the most intensive certification and compliance efforts that we have. We do believe we did an honest assessment of how much work is invested in heavy duty. And also, a lot of these tend to be pretty large companies who sell pretty expensive products, you know, aside from the SOAR products. You know, you're talking about off-road construction equipment, mining equipment, talking about heavy-duty trucks, you know, big equipment that sells for a lot. We believe that the industry can absorb, you know, that by in the cost of their products. So with that, the last thing I'd like to cover is in the case of the aftermarket parts industry, as they indicated, we did a lot of discussions with them, and we are committed to following and tracking how our new aftermarket procedures that we adopted last year are helping with the bringing to market faster aspect. We've already start tracking ourselves, and we've seen improvement with staff addition, and we're intending to see additional increased streamlining and increased time to market with our new procedures once they're finalized by OAL and put in place. So we've already committed to reviewing that with industry, how that's working. And we also are committed to seeing how those new procedures in combination with the fees do impact the industry. So staff is already committed to do that, and we're continue to work with SEMA as we have been doing the aftermarket parts industry. So with that, I think that, I think we struck a good balance. If you would like some additional information in the OPI or the EMA area, please let me know, and I'll ask staff to provide additional details. Otherwise, that's my summary.
All right. Thank you. I will now close the record on this agenda item. However, if it is determined that additional conforming modifications are appropriate, the record will be reopened and a 15-day notice of public availability will be issued. If the record is reopened for a 15-day comment period, the public may submit written comments on the proposed changes, which will be considered and responded to in the final statement of reasons for the regulation. Written or oral comment received after this hearing date, but before the 15-day notice is issued, will not be accepted as part of the official record on this agenda item. The executive officer may present the regulation to the board for further consideration if warranted, and if not, the executive officer shall take final action to adopt the regulation after addressing all appropriate conforming modifications. Okay, so I will bring this to the board for question, comment, and discussion. So please click the raise hand symbol if you would like to speak on this item. And board member Reardon has her hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to commend staff for their work with this item. It is, I know, very complicated at times to work through cost estimates and that sort of thing. But it is so important to our program, not necessarily the establishment of fees, but the whole certification process. So understanding that and staff's commitment to do a review with the affected industries, particularly the aftermarket parts, I am absolutely supportive of this, and I do thank staff for an excellent report.
Thank you, Board Member Hurt.
Thank you. I'll just quickly echo Board Member Reardon's comments. Thank you, staff, for all the work that's gone into it. As I talk to different stakeholders, they have complimented you all on a great process. So I just have two questions. My first is a little bit around the first presentation. There was a slide on post-certification, the in-use compliance, and the retrofit verification program, especially on heavy-duty trucks. And I started to think about our current AB 617 community, the West Oakland Community Emissions Reduction Plan. And a large part of that plan is reliant upon Air Board's adoption and enforcement of mobile source regulations. And I think that's the same with all AB 617 communities. You know, I think of the Port of LA and Long Beach. And so there are studies that have shown that even a small number of non-compliant trucks or off-road equipment can have an outsized impact on communities based on the amount of PM they emit. And so I was wondering if the staff could speak to the support of enforcement in AB 617 communities. Is there a place for the public to trace, as I heard earlier, enforcement or the retrofit verification program? I was just curious too how we interface with local air districts on enforcement and compliance.
Hey, Mayor Hurt, I'm going to ask this, Richard. I'm going to ask Chief Counsel Ellen Peter, who oversees the enforcement program. So I think it's a great question and kind of give you sort of a quick overview of the interaction with locals, local districts, for instance, with respect to mobile source enforcement and related enforcement campaigns. And certainly beyond her answer, it's something we can go into a deeper dive with you as well. But Ellen, can you cover that, please?
I'll give a beginning of it. And also, our enforcement program is multi-divisional because we're looking at the, as you noticed, in the on-road compliance. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. And sometimes the problem is, I'll focus on trucks since that's the question before you, is sometimes what happens with trucks is the parts aren't very durable. And so they're just breaking down and falling apart. And you see that coming out of the tailpipes and other settings. And so that's sometimes the problem. And so that's why the part of the presentation where they were talking about the warranty claims coming in, because often the drivers are going to report this. And then, so that part is one aspect of it. Some of the parts are just like in the Volkswagen situation, is their engines were designed to actually turn off the emissions control process. So just like we have, and as you know, Volkswagen was kind of case one, and we've had other light duty cases since then. And we're also investigating complaints and other situations, including in the heavy duty truck space. So those things are all going on. Those costs are not, captured in the cert fee as was noted in the report. So there's kind of, what's going on with this truck? Is it, not durable, or is there another kind of problem? So all this information goes in. And as I said, it's multi-divisional looking at it. So I'm the chief counsel and also over the enforcement division, but it's very much of a partnership between Annette Aber's groups. So we have Alan Lyons, who is the division chief over the emissions compliance division that presented today. So that's one division that's working on it. Mark Fuentes is the division chief over the Mobile Source Lab division, and his whole staff does these tests. So they're the ones that put the trucks, which we'll have in our new facility, much easier to test, put the cars and the trucks on to figure out where the problems are. And then another aspect of this, which is part of Allen Lyons, is they take the warranty data coming in. They pull in use. They, as was mentioned, they have a whole person, a whole process to pull in vehicles that we test. So all this goes together to identify where the problems are. And then one thing that enforcement division's doing that we're starting to roll out that I think is really quite interesting and will be touched on by the enforcement division probably in the June board meeting when they talk about what they've done the past year is the remote sensing. So we also want to be able to just set up, you know, systems where as a truck goes by, you can tell if a particular truck has got a problem. And so that can have a couple different sources. Unfortunately, some owners of trucks will actually core out the middle of their particulate mat filter so it doesn't work. Because they think that's, you know, better for them. You know, we disagree, but it's really dreadful for the people where they're driving by. We don't have trucks that are being maintained. And so this remote sensing, which is just starting out, will be able to locate those kind of vehicles. And then we can say, oh, is it always, you know, such and such of an engine that always is doing it? That helps us figure out the durability or, you know, possible cheating. And then we turn around and we do it. So it's pretty complex. But as I said, it deals with the lab folks, the certification folks, the enforcement folks, and they all come together to find the, you know, kind of the big offenders. Now, in AB 617 communities, the enforcement division is setting up and doing a lot of the testing. And then they work again with, you know, trucks going by. So they can implement that directly in AB 617 communities. One thing that board member Chuck Forens talked about a lot is truck routes. Do you want these trucks going through the communities? And that's something that the AB 617 folks are looking at. And then when you turn to the different air districts, touching on that point, the air districts do it differently. So I'd like to call out San Diego. They actually really stepped up a number of years ago and are actually doing a lot of enforcement of on the ground of our mobile rules, not just the trucks, but other things too. So once again, that there's memorandums of understanding with different groups. Bay Area stepped in. Early on, San Diego has just kind of totally embraced it recently and is really doing a lot of work. But once again, all of those work with the local, you know, air districts is really valuable. So I kind of went all over the place. So I'm happy to add on anything or tell me where I skip, please.
No, I understand. It's really complex. And I had a community convening meeting yesterday, and it was the question that came up when I talked about attending this meeting this morning, enforcement by the Air Board. And so I think I probably should just speak with you offline in detail.
Okay.
My other question that came out of that convening session had to do with small business owners and in particular truckers having a really hard time understanding the process. If they're not associated, they're not in an association, they're kind of independent contractors, so to speak, small businesses. Are there any in-house resources to support them doing the application and the fee process so that we don't have illegal kind of movement of mobile source?
So for drivers, there is resources training them on the requirements, the owners and the operators and drivers, what the requirements are and how to do it. This fee certification is aimed at the manufacturers that are bringing those trucks into the market. So the small small truck owners and the small fleets don't have any requirements under this cert fee. But with respect to how they operate, There's training programs, there's online videos, there's a truck line that the Mobile Source Control Division operates where people can call in an 800 number, and there's a lot of help there. And the enforcement, if there is an issue, we have a whole enforcement staff that works with people also. So I think we do have a variety of resources for the truck owners and operators. But as I said, this particular fee does not apply to them at all. It's the manufacturers. I want to bring this new engine to California.
Thank you. So I think he heard that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those are all my questions. And again, thank you all for the hard work on this. I did hear some people talk about speed of review, and I think it sounds as if we are really thoughtful about that, and we're going to put metrics, I think, in that spoke to that. So no one likes to increase fees, especially a public official, but it's something that needs to be done so that we can continue doing the hard work. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Dr. Pacheco-Werner?
Thank you to staff, and just sounds like so much work that you've put into striking the right balance. I have two questions. One, if you can just explain to me a little bit more about where do you think the discrepancy may be in the estimates that you're providing, and then the OPA comments, you know, just I'd like to learn a little bit more about where the discrepancy in the numbers, or just kind of understand a little bit more about what the different calculations are. And then the other question, you mentioned the ongoing studies of the impacts of some previous regulations. And I'm wondering, when do you estimate that we'd be able to see kind of the first sort of report back on those, the impact that those are having? Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question. I'm going to cover your second one first, and then I'll punt it to Jackie Lorenko to cover the OPI additional information you're seeking. But if you recall, last year we adopted new aftermarket parts certification procedures. So with the intention of those procedures streamlining our process and bringing to market, allowing to bring to market faster for the parts. During that board hearing, we did commit to do an assessment once those applications are finalized and being used, you know, within a year and a half to determine how the streamlining improvements are occurring, the time to market is being faster. So we did commit last year during that rulemaking to do that assessment with industry. The additional assessment would come into play for us to pay attention to when the fees do start in 2022 calendar year after applying the fees in combination with the new procedures. To assess how is that impacted overall fees and right in this assessment. So that would be probably in mid-2023. So those are roughly the timeframes. OAL hasn't quite finalized the procedures yet, I believe. So we haven't started using the new procedures. So that's the unknown. And industry and I are, you know, agree that we need to track it very closely, and we intend to track it very closely and work together on it. So hopefully that answers your second question. I will kick it over to Jackie Lorenko to give you more details on the OPI differences of opinion on our calculations.
I believe that there's a general discussion going on between OPEI and ARB staff in regard to the upcoming board regulation. They're all looking at the inventory to get agreement on what the real numbers are. From the fee perspective, there was some concern about whether we included electric-powered units into our calculation, and we let them know that we did not. We only included gasoline-powered. There was some issue about whether we applied the correct growth factor. And so there was a composite growth factor that we used, and gasoline tends to be a flat growth, where electric seems to be in the trend is that it is rising. And so the cost per unit that we calculated was about 67 cents per unit based on using this. It's a 0.6% growth per year. If we flatten it, the cost goes up to about 70 cents per unit. But that's sort of the basis of the difference of opinion.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other board member comments or questions? Okay. Seeing none, I will just note that I appreciate staff's willingness to review the effect of the combined fees and process changes once everything's in effect, and then we have some time to take a look back. And I do agree that and assume based on the strong communication and interaction that staff has with industry to date, that review will include input from all of the users of the application process and the folks that are paying those fees, so that we can understand what their experiences are with this. And I also tend to agree with staff that, you know, and I don't think we should hold off on the SOAR portion of the fees to wait for the regulatory process around that to play out. I think we need to move ahead with this with this full package and this process, and I think that's really important. So the board now has before them resolution number 21-9. Do I have a motion and a second for this item?
Madam Chair, I would move approval of this resolution.
I'll second.
All right, thank you. Board Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Bombs?
Yes.
Mr. De La Torre?
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut?
Yes.
Supervisor Fletcher?
Fletcher, aye.
Senator Flores?
Aye. Flores, aye.
Ms. Hurt?
Aye.
Mr. Krakow?
Yes.
Dr. Pacheco-Werner?
Yes.
Mrs. Reardon?
Aye.
Supervisor Serna?
Aye.
Professor Sperling?
Aye.
Ms. Tech-Vorian?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berg?
Aye.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
All right. Thank you. We will now move to open comment. If you wish to provide a comment regarding an item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board, but that is not on today's agenda, please raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if you are on the phone. Will the board clerk please call on those who've raised their hands?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We currently have one person with their hand raised, Evan Edgar. Again, if you wish to make a comment for this open comment session, please raise your hand. So Evan, I have activated your microphone. You can unmute yourself and begin. Evan, are you there? So Evan, I see that the mic is active, but we can't hear you. Evan, we still can't hear you. We have a call-in number right there on the screen. If you can quickly call in and dial in that access code and then dial *9, we can get you on the phone. We'll give you a couple of seconds or, you know, some time to do that. Evan, have you called into that number? We still can't hear you on Zoom. Another option is we have a written comment system. If you want to provide written comment. Okay. Evan, I think I have you on the phone now. If you can dial *6 to unmute yourself.
Okay. Evan Edgar, live.
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Chair and board members, happy Earth Day. I'm Evan Edgar. I'm the engineer for the California Compost Coalition. The Compost Coalition represents a compost and anaerobic digestion industry throughout the state, representing the majority of the certified organic compost market and over 60 facilities. Our members are considered to be in the waste sector as part of the solid waste and recycling industry, but we are ubiquitous in all sectors. We haul and collect organic waste in the transportation sector and produce our own carbon negative RNG and near zero NOx fleets. We are in the electricity sector, producing renewable energy from biomethane from anaerobic digestion and from biomass gasifications from urban wood chips. We are in the agricultural sector, making compost to sequester carbon, reduce water, and create healthy soils. We offer recycling services for the residential and the commercial sector for platinum LEED points. We are reducing short-lived climate pollutants under SB 1383 in the near term, doing the heavy lifting in the most cost-effective manner. The California Compost Coalition has been intimately involved with all of the scoping plans since 2006 and look forward to the 2022 scoping plan third update to be adopted later this year. Today, on Earth Day, we are releasing a report. The report is a California's Waste Sector Net Zero Greenhouse Gas Report, where the waste sector has been determined to be net zero greenhouse gases by 3.7 times based on 2018 data, where the recycling and compost and biomass combustion avoided emissions are three times greater than our direct and indirect emissions. Following current policy, the waste sector can be 9.9 times net zero greenhouse gases in 2030. We are in the middle of the circular economy with proven technologies keeping our organics in state with new green jobs. Please do not disrupt our progress by trying to electrify our RNG fleets. The scoping plan update needs to include RNG procurement and the sequestering of carbon on natural working lands with compost and biochar use. Plus, metrics need to be presented to demonstrate cost effectiveness, where our programs are the most cost effective and proven programs. The latest report shows that climate mitigation needs to occur within the next 10 years, and California cannot wait until 2045 to be carbon neutral with an unreliable grid and billions of dollars of infrastructure costs, where today we have the best programs that are net zero now with carbon negative fuel based upon zero waste programs with near zero NOx fleets making organic compost with zero pesticides. With the release of the waste sector net zero greenhouse report today, we look forward to collaborating with your staff on a scoping plan process over the next 18 months. We are the zero heroes, and we need to be recognized and incentivized in upcoming scoping plan update process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Glad we can get you on. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the list of open commenters.
All right. Thank you very much. The April 22nd, 2021 CARB board meeting is adjourned. Happy Earth Day, everyone, and thank you for joining us.